Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.
Hello, everybody. Well, welcome to my program today. I'm so excited to have you all here. Well, unfortunately, objectively, Dan couldn't make it here today, but I'm his cousin, objectively, Rob Boss, and I'm hosting today's program, which is the Halloween special for Truth Wanted. Thank you all so much for coming. This is our first episode live back in the studio since the pandemic started. I'm joined here by these wonderful co-hosts as well. I have ex-Christian Aaron with us. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Rob. Rob Boss. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love that you got like a She-Ra thing going on there. You know, almost. It's like you got like that cat power. But what's your costume exactly? You want to explain that to the audience?
Oh, yes. I am actually a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Look at that, a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are wolves in sheep's clothing. You got to be careful. Protect your heart, folks. Anyway, we also have our other wonderful co-host today. We have MD Aware. I think, are you Dr. House, MD Aware? Is that the costume we're going with today?
Obviously, that's correct. So you can expect me to be extra salty and angry today. It's really horrible to meet you, Rob Boss.
Nothing different from a usual show, then, is what I'm hearing.
That's correct.
I understand. Yes, I understand. Well, I'm so glad that we get to do this. That, you know, usually, objectively, Dan starts his program by talking to some of the guests that he has. But, you know, I thought we could do something a little bit from my program. And I thought that we could start by maybe doing a little bit of a painting session. How does that sound to you guys?
Oh, that sounds great.
Wonderful. Oh, great. Well, feel free to tag along. And folks at home, you can also tag along here. What I have here is just this small painter's brush. We're going with this classic Truth Wanted green acrylic paint here. So everything you can do today, everything you're going to see, you can all do with green paint. Okay, so that's something I want to get out of the way first. So first, we got to just get a little bit of paint here in the cup. And we're just going to start right in the middle here of this paint. So let's see what this looks like. There we go. Okay, we're just getting some nice brush strokes here. And, you know, it's quite difficult to do this painting when you're looking at the monitor. You're not really looking at the easel, but, you know, when you have the experience, the painting experience like I do, you can really do anything. And that's what I want to encourage you folks at home. You can do anything if you really put your mind to it. So we're just starting with, like, a nice middle here. No, you got to be careful not to get paint on your pants, but, you know, we all make happy little accidents, right? Happy little mistakes. So that's not that bad. So we got a bit of a middle part here, and what I'm trying to do is get some mountains going in the background. Just some nice happy little mountains. Yeah, that's looking really, really nice. But what do you guys think about what we should paint today? You know, I'll leave it up to you. What you guys have any other ideas about stuff we should be painting?
I really like the colors. It's really nice.
We should get a nice skyscape going. You know what we should do? We should also
love it.
We should advertise the show a little bit, I think. I think we should get that Truth Wanted logo up there. Nice and, yeah, that's looking really good. You know, and again, you can do this all. You don't have to buy an expensive palette of colors, folks. Just really the green paint is all you need to get all of this done. And look at that. Oh, we're getting some nice colors here. You know, any you know, I'm used to talking to my guests with co-hosts.
How about some water? I'd love water? To see some. Okay. Yeah,
let's get some.
Maybe
let's
a nice, get some, like let's a go pond down. Or a lake or something.
I like that.
Yeah, fill up the bottom of the canvas.
Yeah, fill at the bottom. You know, it nice to get some. There we go. Let's get some nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't this beautiful? Isn't this nice? You want to do these wide brush strokes here and really get it in. And I thought, let's be bold. Let's be courageous today. I think we should get just a Loch Ness monster right in the middle of that. You see that there? Yeah.
I'm really a
classic, right? I mean, if you ever buy, folks, a Rob Boss original, I usually put the Loch Ness monster in there somewhere. You know, it's kind of a little painter signature there. It's really one of my favorites. Yeah, let's just get this nice, and let's fill this out too. I think maybe a Bigfoot should be in there too. What do you guys think? Put a little Bigfoot in there.
Oh, definitely.
I think that fits the themes quite nicely.
Oh,
right. You know,
alien?
This show.
I think
alien.
I see. Yeah, I see something.
How about
I love that idea.
How about a big old UFO? You think a UFO would be good in a picture like this?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too.
I think it really, really brings it all together.
Right. You know, this is a very classical comp. Rembrandt often had UFOs in his pieces. Picasso, I think, picked that up, too, from him, if you ever look closely. Now, when you get in the paint, you gotta beat the devil out of the brush here. You know, if you really want to make sure you're cleaning your brush right now. Of course, the devil is a very real phenomenon here. I'm very different from objectively Rob. Objectively Dan. You know, he is an atheist. I am a theist. I mean, look at the trees, right? Just look at the trees. Look at and you can make an argument for God right there. And I just like these happy little trees we got here going on in the middle. Yeah. This painting's really coming together, guys. I'm really glad we got to share this. I got to share this moment with you all today. Let's go ahead and fill out these edges here. And we're just really making stuff happen.
Wow.
It's beautiful.
Amazing.
It's a masterpiece at this point.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they say I invented, you know, not to toot my own horn or anything, but, you know, they say I invented this ASMR they're talking about these days. You know, and I try to be the master of that genre as I just quietly paint here. You know, it's very different from the typical call-in show. Most people just get to the calls, but I don't know. You know, the painting's where it's at. And you can all be painters at home, too. Like I said, just green acrylic paint, and that's really all you need to get a good picture like this going. Oh,
so relaxing.
It, you know, that's one of the reasons I paint, you know, just to really relax and just let myself feel all the things I'm feeling. And get my beliefs out there, too. I like my paintings to be ideological. That's why I've got the UFOs in there and the Bigfoot. But most importantly, those happy little trees out there in the center. I think that's what really ties it all together. Okay, we're almost done here.
Do you say Bigfoot or do you say Sasquatch?
We, you know, depends on where you come from, right? But it's all the same to me, you know? It's whatever you want to call it. That's why I say Sasquatch, Bigfoot. It's open to everybody, you know.
Is that Saint Nick that I see in the back there?
Saint Nicholas. Yeah, you know, I thought I'd put a little bit of other kinds of cryptids. You know, Saint Nicholas is a cryptid. I fully believe that.
Is that Jesus to the right of the
absolutely.
Sasquatch there?
Oh, I'm glad you noticed. See, I thought I would sneak that in there. But yeah, you know, that's Jesus right there. And
another cryptid.
Another cryptid for
Jesus,
sure.
Then.
He's only ever been written about. Nope, we haven't really caught any video evidence of him yet, but we're trying. We do it every day. Okay, so here we go. We're really tying this together. And I really think we're about finished here. Just want to get this corner. And of course, gotta beat the devil out of this brush here. Okay, I think we got a nice little piece here, guys. What do you think? You like that? This is a Bob Ross original.
I want it on my wall.
Rob Koss.
I want it on a t-shirt, really. Rob. I love it.
Yeah,
well,
you
that's
know,
an even better idea.
I like that idea. In fact, what I think we should do, ex-Christian Aaron, is I think we should use this image for next month's t-shirt of the month and probably sell that to you guys. Would you guys like that as part of the Atheist Community of Austin?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we'll have to run it by objectively Dan, obviously, when we see him next.
But. Oh, well, I think he'll do just fine. I think he'll really enjoy a piece like this. You know, he's bought many of my artworks before. This is nothing new. But I'm so glad that we got to do this little program for you guys today. I'm so glad you got to join us with that. And of course, we do have to get to some calls here in just a second. But before we do that, we are going to be doing things a bit differently today on this program. You see, we asked you folks at home to send in some of your scary stories, okay? And we picked some of the best ones, but we also have some scary stories ourselves that we'd like to share with you guys. Nothing too scary now, okay? We're not gonna, you know, go too hard on it, but that's okay. You know, we're gonna make this just a nice scary stories program for everybody. And, you know, ex-Christian Aaron, I think your story is the one that we ought to start with first. What do you think about that?
I do think so, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, let's go ahead and get started, Aaron. Let's hear your story from your perspective. Here we go.
I was visiting the city library to research some topics for the show and happened to fall asleep in one of the book stacks. When I woke up, it was midnight, and the only illumination came from the exit signs and the few lights that had been left on, creating an eerie glow. Suddenly, the giggle of a child echoed eerily through the deserted building. The library was known to be haunted, but I never believed in that. I started thinking that maybe the janitor or the night watch person had seen me and were trying to play a prank on me. The giggle came again. Hello? Is someone there? I asked. No answer. I remembered that children's books had been on the second floor. I went to see if anyone might be there. Hello? I asked again. Is anyone here? Seconds passed. Then I heard a noise. A moment later, I saw something flying towards my head. I managed to duck just in time, and when it came to rest, I saw it was a copy of The Dark by Lemony Snicket. Who's there? I said. And why would you throw this book at me? A girl's voice answered.
You left me and never said goodbye.
I'm sorry, I said. I don't even know who you are. After a brief moment, I heard.
You know me. We were best friends, and you left me. Everyone left me.
The voice was mournful. Please tell me who you are, I said. I would like to help you. I heard a noise behind me, and when I turned around, a girl about 8 years old stood there, with a book tucked under her arm. A sudden feeling of recognition came over me, but I couldn't narrow down who she was. She had brown eyes under her glasses, and her dark hair was tied in a ponytail on each side of her head. Her faded plaid dress ended just above the knees, and she had a rounded collar. She looked solid, but was floating a few inches above the floor.
Do you remember me now?
She said.
You left me here to die. And now I'm all alone. We promised never to leave each other.
Vague memories started coming to mind, but I still couldn't place who she was. If I did, I'm sorry, I said, but I'm still having trouble remembering. Please tell me your name.
Don't you remember? It's me, Lonnie. Lonnie Lewis.
The mention of the name caused everything to come flooding back to me. We were next door neighbors and best friends until a tragic accident happened in this library, an incident that I had blocked out of my memory up until just now. Oh no, Lonnie, I missed you. You were my best friend. She looked down.
I missed you too,
she said. You must get lonely here. She lifted the book from under her arm and hugged it to her chest.
I have my books,
she said. I could see the book she was holding. It was another copy of The Dark. It was our favorite book. We would sneak off to the corner of the library and read it and try to scare each other. It was great fun. I remember reading that with you, I said. We always covered our eyes and peeked through our fingers to read page 47. The corner of Lonnie's lips curved upwards.
I remember that. It was my favorite part,
she said.
I took it out of the disposal cart. I hate when they get rid of my favorite books. Why did you come back?
She asked.
You must be in your 50s by now.
I winced. I'm only in my 30s. She shrugged.
A grown-up. I wish I could have lived to be grown-up.
Some of the details are still fuzzy to me, I said. Can you tell me what happened?
I guess,
she said, shuffling her feet, which were not quite touching the floor.
We were in our favorite corner, reading our book, when we noticed something strange on the shelf high above us. I tried to climb up the bookcase to get it, but before I got there, the bookcase tipped over on top of us. I hit my head against the floor, and the falling books hit you and knocked you out. I remember everything starting to get dark, but just before I did, I looked over and saw what was on the top shelf, a small bronze bell. After that, everything went black, and the next thing I knew, I was here in the library, alone. But I wasn't in my body anymore. I saw people coming to help you, and what looked like me on the floor. But they took you away. They eventually took my body away, and then everyone left. I was alone, and I've been that way ever since, all these years.
I'm so sorry, I said. I didn't mean to leave you. And to be honest, I couldn't even remember any of this until just now. I wouldn't have left you if I could have prevented it. She smiled slightly.
Maybe. But at least we're together now. At least for a few more moments.
What do you mean by that? I asked. Is something wrong?
It's okay, but I have to ask you something now.
Lonnie said. What is it? What can I do? I asked excitedly.
Wake up,
she said. Suddenly, the loud ringing of hundreds of bells filled my ears. The deafening sounds were hurting my ears. And when it reached its peak, I sat upright in my bed, now awake, with the sound of bells gradually fading out. It was all a dream, I said. However, on the bed next to me was a copy of Lemony Snicket's The Dark. I remembered having the book and being strangely drawn towards it, but didn't remember it being in my room. Well, really strange, I chalked it up to coincidence. I decided to go to the kitchen to get a drink, but when my foot reached the floor, I kicked something that made a tiny ringing sound. I quickly turned on the lights and saw that it was a tiny bronze bell. I found the courage to pick it up, and when I turned it over, I read an inscription that sent chills down my spine. It read, together forever.
Whew. That was a very chilling story. How did you get all those special effects as you were telling that story? I don't understand.
It's just part of my memory, honestly.
Wow. That's incredible. That's quite a memory you have now. That really sends some chills down my spine. But, you know, that's okay because we can all relax and keep calm because we're just telling some stories tonight, right? Just some stories. They're nothing more than that. Is that right? Yeah. Of course. Well, folks, I mean, this is the Halloween special, but, of course, this is Truth Wanted. This is a call-in show. So we would love to get to talk to you today and maybe you can share some stories of your own. So you can call in at the number on the screen there and give us a call. You can also do it through your computer if you like. The link to that is going to be in the description. But for now, I see that we actually have a caller on the line that wants to talk to us. You guys ready to talk to somebody?
Yeah. So ready.
Oh, great. Well, before we do that, I know Objectively Dan never forgets. He always has to thank the wonderful patron of the week because every single week we always give a shout out. Well, not we, of course. You know, I'm usually not here, but everybody else that hosts this wonderful program, they give a special shout out to the patron that supports most recently. That's right. And this week we have a new patron that we'd like to give a shout out to. This week's patron of the week is going to be on the screen for me to read. And the problem
is Sarah Cook. I think I read about it earlier. We had a new Patreon, so I looked it up earlier. It's Sarah Cook.
You know, the monitor is reversed on my end here, and it's a little hard to read backwards here. I was not trained in the arts of reading backwards, but thank you so much, Sarah Cook, for donating to this program. It really means a lot. This program is a part of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so we really do appreciate it. We do it because of viewers like you. So thank you. And so now we're going to get back to the calls here. We got Scotland, who's calling in from New York. Not someone named New York calling from Scotland. We have Scotland calling from New York. Scotland, you're live on Truth Wanted tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing just lovely. I mean, I'm here in the studio here, and I've got my friends over here who unfortunately couldn't make it in the studio because they're in the cold, wintry norths of Canada. But, you know, we're here in spirit all together, so I'm thankful for that. How are you doing, Scotland?
Nice. I'm doing okay. Got a really spooky, scary story for you. So, folks, it's time to put the kiddos to bed.
Okay.
Put them in another room. Escort them out.
All right, you hear that? The folks at home, please put your kiddos away. I know this is usually a family-friendly program, but tonight, you know, it might get a little intense, I suppose. So let's go ahead and hear it, Scotland.
I was in Woodstock, New York, right around, I'd say, probably the month of June 2015. I was driving in a car with one of my best friends sitting in the right-hand passenger seat, not on any kind of narcotics, not on any hallucinogens, not cannabis, not any alcohol. Looked over and right in my, as I looked in my periphery, already in my periphery, and I caught it right dead in the center of my pupils, the Stephen King's The It Clown, holding one red balloon in his right hand, or in his left hand, and then he waved at me with his right, and then just blipped right out of existence. Just a blip, not a fade away, just a blip.
Well, that's quite a story. Now, you know, there was a clown epidemic a couple of years ago. Did you hear about this, Scott? Where there was a lot of people dressed up as clowns trying to scare people, I think because the new It movie was a recent release. You know, maybe it was one of those pranksters, one of those jokesters that was trying to pull a fast one on you.
Then how did he blip out of existence?
Now that I can't tell you, Scott.
I saw him vanish.
That I can't tell. Maybe my co-host could tell you, but I don't know if I could tell you that.
My first question was like just maybe a little bit of inconsistency in the story. You said that you saw it out of the peripheral, but then you also saw it in the center of your pupil. So do you remember if it was like in front of you or like actually out to the side? Just trying to get all the details, all the data here.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Do you know, like when you turn your head and you see, like, as I would turn my head, I would turn my head and it was to the left-hand side.
Okay.
And then right on the corner of the curb, the clown was standing there and I caught it dead center with my eyes. And then we were at the light or the stop sign, and then it waved at me. It was holding a balloon, and then it just blipped out of existence, kind of like that Tyler Durden blip from a Fight Club. Boom, just there and not there all of a sudden.
And was this the Bill Skarsgård It Clown, or was it the Tim Curry It Clown?
No,
that's an important question. Important distinction.
Which one?
Tim Curry It Clown, because it was in 2015 before the Scarsdale It Clown came out.
Tim Curry's a frightening man. I would also be scared if I saw Tim Curry in a clown outfit.
Yeah, I would. You know? I probably would have been more scared if it was just Tim Curry
You know, Skylden, I can't explain every single phenomenon that people encounter on the day-to-day, but I do know that people often make mistakes, and people can be quite tricky. You know, they can try to fool you into believing things that aren't really there. So maybe I think this was some sort of prankster, you know, some sort of jokester that was trying to pull the wool over your eyes, you know. But that's the best explanation I can come up with, because otherwise that's quite a frightening story, Scotland. That's quite a frightening story.
Maybe somehow my mind got tricked into thinking he blipped away.
Could be.
Just faded into the background of the crowd. Mm-hmm. Because there were a lot of people walking by and passing by.
Mm-hmm.
In my clear memory, I specifically clearly remember him blipping out of existence. And the night I was scared to holy high hell, and the night that I was laying in my best friend's couch, I heard the It Clown's, his voice in my head, and he said, "I'm hot."
He said, "I'm hot."
Yes.
Or did he call you hot?
Did he call you hot? Because
no, he didn't call me hot. He said, "I'm hot."
Now, you sure you weren't under the, you know, influence of hallucinogens? You know, I would never do such a thing myself, but, you know, I've heard other people have quite experiences, and that matches up with some of those experiences, I think.
I wasn't under the influence of any hallucinogens or any substances, I promise you.
Well,
as often
how
as
long had you been awake?
I take them.
How long had you been awake,
Scotland? To be honest with you, I can't remember at this point. I don't remember if I'd have been awake for over 24 hours or just got another full night's rest the night before. It's just too long ago to remember that.
All right, fair enough.
Well,
one question I have about the story is, like, you said it happened in 2015, correct?
Yes.
Regardless. Okay, so it's been a few years. I'm wondering if, like, at the time that it happened, did you tell anybody else about it? Because the details, I'm curious on how these details have happened and whether the story has kind of been this way since the very beginning, or whether as you've told the story over the years, whether, you know, more details have been added in, like him vanishing right away. Do you have any memory of telling anyone else about the story?
I didn't tell anybody about the story until like a few months afterward, because I was just so scared. And that happened probably in June, and April, May, June, May or June. And then I was hospitalized that August and diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I didn't really speak up about it until probably September or October. But the details haven't changed, just because that was such a scary moment in time for me. It just has stuck with me all these years. And it's been a reoccurring nightmare and delusion and visions that I see frequently.
I think that last
explanation.
Yeah, I think that last part of the story kind of is part of that missing data that we were looking for earlier.
I mean, the other question is, how do you know that your memory hasn't changed, right? When they do studies on this sort of thing, the way they do it is they ask people to write down a memory, and then they ask them again about that memory in, you know, 5 years or whatever. And people think that their memory hasn't changed, but when you compare it to what they wrote down, objectively hasn't changed, can be some pretty significant distinctions, right? Did you do anything like that? Any documentation?
No documentation. I was too afraid to document it. I was afraid that if I documented it, it would make it all too real for me.
Well, it sounds like that was a pretty frightening encounter. Whether what you experienced was real or not, you still have something that made you feel an emotional type of way. So with that being said, I do feel for you, Scotland. You know, if you have...
I appreciate that.
Of course. You know, I'm playing a bit of a character right now. You know, folks often say I'm kind of a character. They compare me to some other painter on TV. I don't really know.
Maybe objectively Dan told you about me. He said I could call back anytime.
He said that... I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's told me about a lot of people over the years. But, you know, the point I was trying to make here is, you know, whatever situation you're going through and whatever is actually frightening you, whatever you might be suffering through, I do honestly wish the best for you. And I hope that you're talking to people that can really get you the help that you need. It sounds like you have had some of those conversations. So that's the best I can hope for you, Scotland. Is that okay with you?
Yes. Yes, that is. Do you think this could be possibly the scariest story of the night?
I got to tell you, you know, that is a pretty frightening tale. I mean, that made me shiver in my boots. That really did. But, you know, we have some other tales that we got to tell. In fact, I think we're going to tell another one right now. So, Scarlett, I'm going to go ahead and let you go for tonight. And thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, my man.
We do appreciate it. And, folks, we do have open lines. We plan on talking to some more folks later this evening. But in order to do that, you guys have to call in. So please call in when you can. We got that number right there on the screen. And while we are waiting for some other people to kind of call in to tell us their stories, and it doesn't have to be any stories, mind you. You know, this is Truth Wanted. We'll talk to anybody about almost anything. But look, MD, I believe you have a scary story that you'd like to share next. Would you like to start that story for us?
Oh, boy. I'm so eager to share.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get that story started then.
This is a story of a time in my medical school when we had our first visit to the anatomy lab, where we worked on cadavers for the first time. I got to class a little bit early, but it was already almost full, so I took one of the available seats. As I sat down, I noticed that the woman next to me was someone I didn't remember seeing in class before, but this wasn't totally out of the ordinary for me. She seemed very nervous, so I asked if she was okay. She turned and looked at me with an uneasy smile and said, "Yeah, I think so. I'm just a little bit nervous about this lab because I've never actually seen a dead body before." I tried to ease the tension a little bit by making a joke. I said, "Well, I don't think you have much to worry about. I went and had a chat with the cadavers and I told them to behave themselves." And so she chuckled and she said, "Thanks, that's very nice of you." I introduced myself and she responded, "I'm Audrey Temple." We chatted a bit more, and then she asked if we could be dissection partners for the lab, and I agreed. She said, "Oh, great. I feel much better about doing this now." And then she turned to me and she said, "Here, I made some cookies last night." She pulled out a little plastic container and handed me a homemade cookie wrapped in a little napkin. I wasn't particularly hungry, but I took it to be nice, and I took a bite, and it was pretty good. She said, "Do you like it?" I told her I did. She said, "Oh, I'm so glad. They taste great, but I make a huge mess whenever I make them. I wind up getting flour all over everything, but they're really tasty and they help me relax when I'm nervous about something." And about that time, the instructor walks in, so I wrap up the cookie and the napkin and I throw it in my backpack for later. So we all made our way over to the anatomy lab. When we got there, I noticed that Audrey was again looking very nervous, standing a little bit behind me as our instructor started in explaining the dissection for the day. This is one of those stereotypical rooms you may have seen in movies, where there are a bunch of autopsy tables in a room with cadavers on them in big white body bags. And just when we got to the point in the talk where he was about to open the body bag, all the lights in the lab went out. There were a few audible screams, including Audrey, who put her hand on my shoulder reflexively. After a few moments, she took it off and said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I just got scared." I said, "It's okay. I was a little bit nervous there myself." And at about this time, everyone is reaching into their pockets for their phones to turn on their flashlights. But soon after that, all the lights came back on. There were sounds of some nervous laughter, but we managed to compose ourselves again, and the instructor finished his lecture. We were about to break into our groups when I noticed that Audrey was no longer behind me. I figured she'd gone to the restroom or get some water, or she'd just been spooked. But I figured that she would see me when she got back. So we broke into our partner groups, and I headed over to the cadaver that I was assigned for the dissection. But as I started to walk over, the instructor says, "Hey, I see you don't have a partner." And this guy's partner seems to have become ill, points to one of my classmates. He says, "So would you mind partnering up with him?" I told him I did have a partner. And when he asked who it was, I said, "It's Audrey." He says, "Audrey who?" I said, "Audrey Tempo. She was just here." He looks at the class list and he says, "There is no Audrey Tempo in this class, so I don't know who you're talking about. Why don't you two just go and get started?" So this seemed very weird to me, but I figured we can proceed. And when Audrey gets back, she can join the group. And we'll just do it with three of us. No big deal. So we started the dissection, and my partner started recording some information from the toe tag about the patient. Comorbidities, surgeries they'd had in the past, their age, what they died of, that sort of thing. But then he stops, and he says, "What was the name of the partner you had before me?" And I said, "Audrey Tempos." And he goes white as a sheet, and he says, "Holy crap, look at this." So I go over to where he's standing, and he points at the toe tag, and in big bold letters, it says, "Audrey Tempos." I tried to contain myself, but I decided I needed to leave. I gave some excuse to the instructor and left to go home. And as I walked home, I tried to make sense of what was happening. I told myself, it's just a coincidence. There's lots of people with the same name. Doesn't mean anything. It's just a weird thing that happened. So I get home and I drop my backpack on the ground. I reach in and I pull up my laptop to do some work. And as I pull it out, something fell on the ground. And I look down in horror at a napkin containing a half-eaten.
My goodness, what a frightening tale, MD.
True story.
Yeah. MD, your shoulder. You've got something on your shoulder. You've got something on your shoulder.
Something there.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna have to get some dry cleaning done here.
Oh my goodness.
It looks like a handprint.
I don't know what that was. Maybe my dog's making cookies or something.
Well, that is quite an unfortunate coincidence, considering the exact moment that where we discovered this, we also just told the story about, you know, cadavers and whatnot.
Yeah, that's weird.
What a very frightening tale, MG. I don't envy your position. This is why I never went to medical school. I just became a painter. You know, I just really wanted to just kind of live my life a little more carefree. But folks, you know, this is a call-in show, but unfortunately, you know, we have open lines right now. So I just think I'm going to have to make conversation here with my co-host while we wait for you wonderful folks to call into the show. And maybe we'll play some other stuff in here in just a second. But I'm having a lovely time tonight with you guys. How about you guys? You guys doing okay?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah,
great.
This is it's a little spooky. I'm a little scared, but it's okay.
It is a little scary.
It's kind of spooky though, right?
The good thing here is here at the studio, I've got a wonderful studio audience that's looking at us right now we may be able to feature in just a second. But I'm just having a lovely time here. You know, while I'm talking about the atheist community of Austin, maybe now it's a good time for me to show you some of the other shows that are created here at this place. Would you guys like to see that?
Yeah, definitely.
Great. Well, maybe we'll just play a video real quick and show you guys some of the other shows you can watch if you haven't already. Check it out.
I have had girls where, like, I put my hand sort of, like, creeping on their chest, and they grab my hand, put it on their throat, and say, "Choke me," you know? And I'm just like, should I do it?
Just saw the ghost hit you.
All right. Kelly.
What I thought was her out of the corner of my eye, so.
I know you're working at this bar. Were you getting high off your own supply here?
Global warming, rise of homelessness, clean water insecurity, human trafficking, slavery still existing in the world. Nah, a lack of belief in God is the problem?
And they're looking at that punctuation going, why would they put that there? That makes no sense. That shouldn't be there.
But yet, oh, you're making an emoji argument.
Argument from God based on the emoji. The emoji argument for God.
Look, I'm just going to ask you directly. Do you think it's wrong to own somebody as property against their will? Do you think that is the case?
I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that.
Really?
Wow.
Was one of my favorite quotes ever, I think.
The emoji one?
I just couldn't believe that was the argument. Because when he was like, just look at that punctuation, I was like, oh, I can tell a lame joke here. It's a smiley face. And he was like, exactly. I was like, exactly. What? What's happening here?
And here we have an audience camera here who's watching this in a very spooky lighting here. We just wanted to show that for you guys real quick before we cut back. And we got a painting costume in there too, which is really fantastic.
Is that an original Rob Boss?
That's an original Rob Boss, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very exclusive. If you look it up online, you can't even find it. You know, I try to keep that really private. You know, that's really, I think, the secret to my artwork. But boy, that Objectively Dan guy, he's got to get some new glasses. I mean, they're so thick. You know, I don't know. I tried to tell him not to wear that stuff on screen, but he just doesn't listen to me. I don't know what it is.
But so is he, right? You know,
you're saying thick. He's thick? Oh, wow.
What?
I think.
Dr. House.
Dr. House, this is
it's a little
this
harsh.
That's a little uncouth, I gotta say. When I'm here, this is a family friendly program. Okay, I don't need that kind of right. language on this program. I mean, Objectively Dan's gonna have to talk to you later. Yeah, I think Objectively Dan's gonna have to talk to you later. But that's between you and him, not me and you, because we're on a different level here. Folks, you know, we still have some open lines, so we would love to talk to you. And again, it doesn't have to be your scary stories. We like to talk about Bigfoot. We'd like to talk about Jesus. Not in the ways that most people talk about Jesus, but like, you know, we do like to talk about Jesus. That is a common thing. I certainly do. But, you know, Objectively Dan, he's got a different point of view, a different perspective on that. But, you know, we still have open lines here. So we'd really like to talk to you guys and really want to continue the conversation. But because we aren't doing that right now, I think we can go ahead and share a little extra story that we have here. We asked you guys at home, well, I say we again. I'm so sorry. You know, I'm acting like I've been hosting this show for a long time, but this is just my first time. You know, they asked you guys to submit some stories yourselves so that maybe we could get them read. And we have a very special guest who's going to be reading this top-picked story that we have at the ACA here. And they're going to be reading it for you right now. So we're going to go ahead and have them tell the story for you. Check it out.
A boy of 5 years is troubled by many vivid dreams. Troubled because they come true. One night, the child is asleep, and in his dreams, he sees a deep darkness all around him. No light and no sound. An explosive thud pierces the darkness, swiftly followed by inhuman screaming. The child tries to look around but sees blackness in every direction. His heart is now racing because he recognized the scream. It's his family dog. He jumps awake, still scared and disoriented. He makes his way into the kitchen to seek the comfort of his mother. She calms him down as he retells the terrible dream of the thud, followed by their dog screaming in pain. His tears were wiped away and he took a deep breath. Before he had finished exhaling, there was an explosive thud outside the house, immediately followed by the screaming of the family dog. It was the sound he had just heard in his dream. It was the sound he had just explained to his mother. The boy ran outside to see the family dog had been hit by a car. The boy couldn't comprehend what was happening as the dream had become reality. From that day on, his mother knew the boy had the gift, a supernatural precognition that ran in the family. From that day on, the boy would be tormented by many dreams coming true, knowing that any childhood nightmare may actually come to pass. That boy is now me, an atheist who understands what childhood priming is, what confirmation bias is, how plastic memories can be, and how to be skeptical about how reliable our memories are, and how memories can be altered by retelling and shared recollection. Be careful what you tell your children. Words have the power to change a child's reality.
Well, that was a lovely... That was a tale with a moral at the end of it. You know, I like tales with little Aesop's fables there, you know, that kind of give a little bit of a meaning. What do you guys think? I thought that was really lovely.
That was suitable for a after-school special.
I think so, yeah. Too. That's my favorite kind of special, honestly.
I do feel like the accent made it, like, the telling of the story was extra
that's
creepy.
True. Well, that's... Yeah, that
really
was... Yeah, that was narrated.
Pull my wool over.
Yeah, for sure. That was narrated by the wonderful John the Skeptic, who has been a featured guest on this program many times, and maybe he'll be a more featured guest in the future. We'll have to see about that. But thank you, John, for reading that story for us, and thank you to the user who submitted that and who gave that lovely tale. Now, thankfully, folks, we have somebody who does want to talk to us. You know, so there are people who want to talk to us in the world, and it's important to remember that. You know, whenever you're feeling alone, there's always somebody you can usually go to. I mean, I don't know you, but there probably is. You know,
you can usually come to us too.
You can usually come to us, and that's an important thing, too. It's an important thing. You can usually come to us, usually live at 7 p.m. Central Time Fridays. And that's what we're doing right now. We're going to go ahead and talk to our next caller here. We have Jim. Jim, who's calling in from New Jersey. Jim, you're live on Truth Wanted. How's it going?
Hello.
Hello. How's it going, Jim?
This is, like, atheist.
Well, you know, that's correct. This show is primarily hosted by atheists, yes.
I'm a Christian, and I've heard, like, many times, like, I'm not 100% sure, but, like, faith is, like, anti-reasoning, or, like, I've just heard that, and, or, like, just being, like, a Christian and just having faith is just, like, you can, it's, like, anti-intellectual, but I just like, wanted to make that, like, known that it's not anti-intellectual.
Interesting. Okay. Well, maybe.
What do you think it is?
Yeah, I was going to say, have MD, maybe you take this one first. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, Jim, what do you, you know, you may have heard it said that faith is the excuse people give when they don't have good reasons. What's your definition of faith?
Okay. Yeah. So, like, yeah, like the Christian faith is like you don't even have faith that God exists. It's just like it's part of like the Christian Bible. Like, it's not, you don't even need faith. It's you already have the knowledge. But like,
how do you get that knowledge?
I believe that I've had it since ever.
What does that mean? Can you explain that a little bit?
Do you have any other knowledge that you've had since ever? What other knowledge do you get the same way?
Like, the definition of God through the Bible lines up with my experience from birth.
What experience? Like, so what specifically? Give me an example. Well, like, I think that most people have a similar sort of experience of life, right? You, like, go to sleep, you wake up in the morning, you eat something, you, like, go do your daily tasks. Most people have a relatively similar life when you think about the broad, you know, the broad spectrum of human, of, like, experiences that are possible. We all live on the same planet, and most of us live, I see you live in New Jersey, so you live in the same country as many of the people on this show, and so, like, what specifically have you experienced that confirms your, or affirms your belief in God? Because obviously we haven't had that same experience.
Mm-hmm. So, my belief in, like, my faith, experience that I've had, like, so, like, a powerful experience, all right? So basically, it's like I believe in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and the Father is what I've known from the beginning, and through the Son and faith on the Son to give us the Spirit is what
this sounds like Christianese to me. I don't know what this means. Can you explain it like I'm an idiot atheist?
Yeah, I'm explaining, like, I experienced the power of God through the Spirit after, like, say, 26 years when I heard the gospel.
Yeah.
But it.
What does that mean? What does it mean when you say you experienced the power of God? What does that mean?
Give me a specific example of an experience you've had.
Mm-hmm.
An experience of the power.
I believe that I received the Spirit of the God that I knew from my birth of the flesh. Mm. And it was through...
I understand you believe that, but why do you believe that?
What what do you mean by spirit?
Eternal life.
Okay.
You've experienced eternal life?
Yes.
Maybe already. I can take this in a different direction if you other hosts don't mind. I know you guys are very experienced at this, but I'd like to give it a shot here. Now, Jim, if I came up to you, because I know some folks who are really into the Reiki. You ever heard of the Reiki? You know what Reiki is?
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes,
okay. So Reiki, there's a lot of people who are into that. And they say, you know what? When that Reiki healer came up to me, I could just feel his spirit in me, right? Like, I could just feel that happening. And there's lots of people that talk about that. You see it on YouTube. You see it in news stories, things like that. Now, but if I came up to you and said, this is why I believe in Reiki, because I feel this, would that be convincing to you?
No, because I know that it was from a man. I'm not 100% sure of what Reiki is.
That's actually. Fair. And that's fair. But I'm trying to give you some perspective, right? So I hear you calling us and you're telling us that you had this feeling it was one time, and that's why you believe it. Can you see why that might be hard for us to find that convincing?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I believe that you need to feel something. You know,
well, sure.
I'm not afraid of it. You know, I don't see how God can actually, you know, how can we not feel anything, right? But
well,
it's also,
well, wait a minute. Let's, Jim, do you think that we as atheists that we don't feel anything?
Well, I think no, I don't.
Okay, because I think that we feel things all the time. Right? We feel things just as much as any Christian or anybody else. But the difference is we don't attribute those feelings to the supernatural, right? We typically have natural explanations for all of those feelings. So if I was to ask you, which feeling that you had was supernatural versus one that was a natural one, how would you tell the difference?
So, like, the experience that I had was the experience that is only through what this gospel. So, like, there's a promise that you would have an experience according to the gospel, and the promise is through whoever puts their faith on the Son of God, you know, through the gospel. I'm pretty sure most atheists, you know, grew up in church. So
sure.
But I believed in the Son because I believe in my sins, and I believe that I had no way to pay for my sins, but through God giving us holiness and His.
So I'm sorry, just because this show is very different, and we have a very particular time, a lot of to us for calls. So I want to try to cut things to the chase just a little bit. Just going back to my question, right? I was asking, how do you tell the difference between a feeling that was natural versus a feeling that was supernatural? In other words, let's say one of us had a natural feeling and one of us had a supernatural feeling. How would we be able to tell?
I mean, I personally, this is what I say, is I know that what I receive can live forever in heaven. And it's not based on myself, but it's His faithfulness, which can endure forever.
Okay. What criteria did you use to come to that conclusion?
Just what I know and believe. It's just 100%
okay.
What I can't control, but no.
So again, I want to go back to this example here of the Reiki, right? Somebody who's really into Reiki, this is what they know and this is what they believe. And this is what they've been told by other Reiki healers that, look, this is the feeling that you're going to get when we do this ritual, because they do a lot of those kinds of rituals in Reiki. And that's how, let's say this hypothetical person says that they know that this is real because someone gave them that perspective. Do you see how that might be a little bit of a problem? Do you see how maybe an environment can affect how somebody might interpret their experiences?
Yeah, I mean, it's... So, like, they had, they went to Reiki. Following.
Well, just so again, with Reiki healers, right, you know, and again, I'm just pulling out an example because there's a lot of different examples you can make of this, but I'm just picking on Reiki for a second. So we go to the Reiki healer, and somebody goes up to that Reiki healer, and they say, you're going to experience a feeling when we do this ritual because this is what this practice teaches. And then they do that ritual and they experience that feeling. And that's how this person knows that Reiki is real, because they experience that feeling. Now, I think you can see the problem with that, Jim, right? The problem is, of course, the problem is that they're telling them what they're supposed to interpret based on that feeling. But you can interpret a lot of different things based on a feeling, right? It doesn't have to be just one particular train of thought. In other words, feelings might not be the most reliable way of knowing something. Do you at least agree with that?
Well, when it comes to God, like, say Reiki was telling you that you would experience God, I wouldn't believe that for a second.
Yes.
But
do you see how if somebody said a baptism or if a prayer you experience God, why we wouldn't believe that?
No, I don't see why you wouldn't believe that. Here's the reason why I believe it. I mean, because, I mean, like, I needed to believe it.
Mm.
So I chose to believe it because I truthfully believe that, I'm going to hell.
Mm. Well.
So, and, you know, if what I received through that promise, like, it's just what I believe. And it's what many people believe. So that, I mean, I don't see, I don't know. But then again, you know, another question.
I have a thought here, Jim. I mean, if we go like what Rob Boss is talking about, he's been kind of delving into like the process of how you came to have this belief that you currently have. And he's been asking a lot of questions about your criteria and how you have, you know, adjudicated these things, whether, you know, he's asking these questions to see if we can get some clarity on how you have reasoned your way and like what is your reasoning for your belief. You called in to say that as a Christian, you have heard people say that like faith is against reason. And I think what we've heard from you today is that it's a feeling, and that you just explained just now that you needed it because you had a fear of hell, which is another feeling. Can you understand a little bit more why some people, and I'm not saying it's the right thing to go around saying that to somebody, because I think that it's not helpful to call somebody unintelligent, but can you understand when we've had these conversations with people and we don't get these solid, consistent reasoning, why someone might say that faith is anti-reason or against reason? Because I think we've heard a lot of kind of, you know, a lot of, I mean, MD called it Christianese. So like mumbo jumbo, I heard a lot of theology. I heard, you know, some like sincerity coming from you, but we haven't really heard solid reasons or consistent reasoning coming. So it's kind of...
If you want us to believe that you're reasonable and that faith is reasonable, then you have to give us a reason.
Yeah. Otherwise, some people might say that you don't have good reasoning, and then you can interpret that however uncharitably you would like.
For me, it's reasonable for me to have seen the, first of all, understand, like, I've always believed that God was holy, but seeing his laws.
So hang on. Can I just want to stop you for 1 second, Jim. So you've always believed that God is holy. You've already jumped past the first question, which is, does God exist, right? So you have basically, it sounds like, you've been brought up in a way that means that you've never truly questioned your belief in God. Would you say that's true? Have you ever truly questioned whether or not God exists?
I wasn't raised up that way. I mean, it wasn't like commanded that I believed in God, but...
That's not what I said, right? I'm not saying that someone commanded you. I'm asking if you personally ever really questioned your belief.
I think so.
And how did you resolve that questioning?
I never cared to... I always thought it was good, but I just...
That's a different question, right?
Questioning whether God... I don't know how I would... I never found it to be a profitable route, but have I questioned? I think I have questioned, you know? I think I have. I mean, how much can you question?
How did you...
I mean, that's a pretty much...
How did you solve that? So, like, for me, when I was raised as a Catholic, and it was not really, like, forced upon me, but I was just sort of grew up in the milieu of religion, right? Everyone just talked about God as though it was, you know, it was real and it was a thing, and it was a thing. It was, you know, as normal to believe in God as it was to, you know, believe that gravity existed. And I never questioned it until I, you know, read some books. I went off to university. I started thinking about other things, and it made me think about my belief in God. And so I decided to resolve that question. I had to go do research, and I started reading and listening to people talk and, you know, watching Atheist Experience and things like that. And so I did some research and I did some thinking of my own, and I figured out why I believe the things that I believe. And so I'm asking, my question to you is, if you're saying that you really went on this, you had a, you know, a period where you were questioning whether or not God existed, how did you resolve it? What was your method?
I don't remember a long period of time where I really started questioning it, but I'm sure, I mean, I wasn't really, you know, religious growing up, and, you know, God wasn't really like, and I really, it just wasn't, it could have, he could have been, it could have not been, I never would have said that I don't believe in God or like he can't be real. You know, it was just always...
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Ooh, we got some wolves howling in the background with this spooky Halloween episode. You know, like, We do have to sort of get things going with the show here because we got some other surprises fun planned. But I want to try to end, you know, have some sort of resolution here with you, Jim. Objectively, Dan, you know, he's from a town called Waco, Texas. You may have heard of Waco, Texas. It got very popular in the news because of a cult there called the Branch Davidians, okay? And they actually still exist, the ones that are left out there on the compound. But, you know, the short of it is they truly believed that the man that lived at that compound was the Messiah, and that they gave them that sense. They believed that because of the feelings that they got from that man when they talked about his holiness and his experiences. You know, I can't take away the experiences of those people, right, that lived on that compound. But you and I both know, Jim, that David Koresh is not the Messiah. He's not holy, right? But how do we know that? Yeah. How do we know that? We know that because, I mean, that's what you really have to ask yourself, honestly. That's what you have to figure out. How do you know that this guy isn't the Messiah, but Jesus Christ is, or any other person, for that matter, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I already believe that I have the Messiah.
I know you do.
I believe that.
But
yeah.
In our eyes, Jesus really isn't any different than anybody else saying they're the Messiah, you know? So we really have to think about that. Yeah. But, you know, Jim, I really, we do have to get things going here, but I do appreciate the conversation. And maybe on a normal night, I think objectively, Dan would probably want to talk to you instead of me. You know, I'm just a painter. I'm not really, this show host thing. I offered to fill in for his services tonight. But, Jim, I'm going to let you go with that one. And thank you so much for calling, honestly. I appreciate your candidness in being able to talk to us, especially to three atheists. That's spooky. It's a very spooky thing to talk to three atheists. I mean, near Halloween, no less. That's bad luck or something. I don't know. Something could happen to you, but I'm sure you'll be okay. But for now, though, we do have some other surprises that we want to get to, and one of them is me. It's my turn. I get to tell a scary story here, so I'm going to go ahead and tell it. And, you know, I don't have a lot of that fancy animatronics that you guys have, but I do have maybe some footage that we can look at, but I got to check my notes here, so I'm just going to scroll over to the right place and I'm going to tell my scary story for you guys. So I did some research into the Freethought Library, which is the building that we're in right now. And I found out an interesting fact that has never been brought to light before, as far as I know. See, just a warning before we get started that the ACA is not responsible for any hauntings or other paranormal events that may occur as a result of watching this next segment, okay? It seems that the building I am now in was once the site of an extremist religious cult created in the early 1870s by a notorious trio of criminals and con artists named Bentley Jodivank, Otis Hirsch, and Elnora Patterson. See, they established a church on one of the many empty lots around Koning Land, which is, and they named their cult Last Stand of the Savior. See, the group's ominous motto was Sanguis Innocentium Liberat Nos. See, they told their followers that the motto meant, praise our Savior who shed his blood for us. But those a little more savvy with the Latin may realize that a better translation may turn out to be, the blood of the innocent will set us free. This is because, unknown to the parishioners, there was a secret rule of the cult. The membership could never go above 616 members. This is because the cult leaders believe that Satan was actually working in an undercover fashion with God, fortified by the fact that 666, as represented in the Bible, was supposedly the number of the beast. However, as an earlier translation of Revelation, found in Papyrus 115, showed, the number was mistranslated and should be 616, and they thought that sustaining this level would herald the triumphant return of Jesus and Satan, who would cooperatively create heaven on earth. To accomplish this, the cult leaders had a habit of bringing in new members, having them donate all their worldly possessions to the cult, and then an order of oldest to newest members would sacrifice members to stay at that membership level. They were able to convince their parishioners that Jesus had appeared to them and said that this is the ultimate sacrifice, akin to what he went through at the crucifixion, which would guarantee them into heaven. Now, not wanting the congregation to actually know how many people had been sacrificed, the trio had more senior members bury the victims in unmarked graves scattered all over the compound. When the library was built, many of these graves were found. However, it's reasonable to think that many of them went undiscovered. And we think we found some evidence of the departed spirits here in this library. Now, I'm going to show you some security camera footage that we found while researching this story for you, which seems to show the existence of some of the spirits of the deceased, but, and I warn you, some of it may be disturbing. So if you, well, you may want to turn away from the screen for a minute if you have a weak constitution or a scare easily. See, maybe we can get the camera going here, but we have, there we go. We have some footage here, as you can see. It's very confidential. So we're showing it to you now. Now, ever since that time, there's been a succession of individuals who have tried to keep up the tradition of the Sanguis Order, with the last one being Dirk Brothel, one of the original members of the ACA. See, Dirk died under suspicious circumstances, and see, it was alleged that several former ACA hosts were the ones that did it him, and that may have been his ghost that you just saw on the screen there, and we're showing it to you there. He might be seeking his revenge. Now, we have some more footage of this. Normally, I wouldn't buy into any of this, but this morning we came across some startling evidence that Dirk Brothel's ghost may be, in fact, haunting this building. We checked the security cameras to see manifestations of it, and I was able to get our lawyers to approve showing this footage. See, here's him going through what appears to be straight through the picnic table. And this is right here at the Free Thought Library compound. So I don't know what to make of this footage for you folks. You know, we always, the show's hosts always ask to see more footage, and I'm showing some of them here for you today. Here's a third one. I think it's, well, it's right here in the atheist community library. I think it's right here in the Free Thought Library. That's where this footage is inside. And you can see Dirk there. He seems to be moving something there in the background. I'm not sure what he's doing. Is he, I think he's putting something, or he might be placing something there in the library. Oh, this footage, I don't know if I had seen this one before. That's very interesting. Very interesting. I'm not sure what to make of it, but that's the end of that transition. You know, actually, we've got the Free Thought Library. I mean, it's right here in front of us. I should go check out what's out there right now and see. Hold one second, guys. I think we can check this out for ourselves. Luckily, I've got the wireless mic on me here. Oh my goodness. Let's see. See if I can get on this camera here. Oh, there we go. Hey, everybody. Let's see. Now, it looked like in the according to the footage, it was just right around here. There's something back here. What is this? It says...
There's no ghost here, are there?
Well, it says the ghost of Dirk Brothel bequeaths you one free item from the ACA online store. Wow, that's really amazing. Hey, you know, I think you should take this for yourself. Maybe do something with that. I'm sure the ACA redeems...
It's not spooky, is it?
No, I mean, I don't know. You tell me. I mean, it came from a ghost, but hey, that's free stuff. You know, you don't get free stuff every single day. Well, good.
I was not told there were ghosts here.
Well, you know, this is a scary show today. You know, that's kind of the whole premise. But yeah, good for you. You got something out of that. Give a round of applause for that, folks. Well, that's just amazing. I can't believe it. Oh, my goodness. Ooh, I got to sit back down here. That was a very scary, very scary situation. But, you know, it turned out really well for us because we got to give that gentleman in the audience there a free coupon for the ACA's online store. So, you know, I guess they support capitalism in the afterlife. I don't know if that's their prerogative. I haven't really gotten there yet myself. But, wow. So that's what I was able to find out about this location. And we'll have to do some more research. But wait a minute. Something weird is happening. I think I'm feeling a sudden cold feeling that is coming out of the floor. Hold on, it's moving up my leg, and it feels like someone's trying to pull me down. I think it's the ghost of Dirk Brothel in the studio with me now. He's pulling my leg, just how I'm sort of pulling your leg right now. Just kidding, folks. I'm not Bob Ross or Rob Koss or whatever. I'm objectively Dan, and I've been in costume this entire time. I fooled you guys. Can you believe
what?
It? I know.
How could you?
I
said that horrible thing about how thick you are.
I know, and that was something. But you know what? I had to go undercover tonight to see what would happen. And this is it. This is me. Obviously, I know it's quite a shock. You guys didn't know, but the reason why we're doing some of these silly stories tonight is to actually prove a message and a point, which is everything that you just heard tonight, of course, was completely made up. In every single possible respect. All of the stories were written by our crew members and, of course, performed by the hosts here. But we tell these stories to show that we're just having fun, but using good reason and using good skepticism can prevent you from believing in dangerous ideas, more dangerous than ghosts and more dangerous than goblins. There's a lot of people that have beliefs out there that I believe need to be challenged, and I think the other hosts of the show also believe need to be challenged. So we hope that in doing some fun stuff for you tonight that you're able to see some of the flaws in some of these stories. And by the way, if you go back to the footage, I encourage you guys to figure out there's a hidden meaning behind all the names that we used here tonight. And in the comment section below, if any of you guys can figure out all the meanings, we might be able to give you a special surprise as well. We'll see how that turns out. But yep, it's me. I'm actually not a painter. I'm just show host Objectively Dan. I'm really sorry about that, you know.
Really pulled the wool over our eyes there.
I know. Yeah. I take the beard
Which
off.
Which is especially ironic because she's wearing a sheep's clothing.
You're right. There's a lot of wool puns happening tonight that I feel like are underrated on Aaron's part, so we do have to shout that out. I can't take the beard off because I got the microphone set up, so I'm just going to have to keep rocking the beard. But, you know, this has been a really fun episode tonight. We've got, like, time for one more call, I think, before we wrap it up. We got things going pretty good here. And I think we should do, oh man, we got some, I think we should end up with a scary story. Well, we got Jasmine, who's calling in from Canada, who wants to talk to us. Jasmine, you're going to be our last call tonight for our special Halloween episode of Truth Wanted. What do you got for us, Jasmine?
Well, you know, I slept in the pallium beds before when I was on call, and I, as a theist, felt just very creeped out.
I believe
it. I'm wondering how you guys would feel, considering your atheist soul, three of you.
Well, what do you mean, how we would feel? About what exactly?
Well, about actually having to sleep in a pallium bed.
Oh.
People have passed on.
I don't know. MD, you probably have the most experience with that between all three of us, right? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I sleep in... So some of the call rooms that I sleep in on a, like, regular basis used to be patient rooms. And obviously, I mean, I work in a building where multiple people die every day. And I've never been haunted by anything except for my pager. That's the real scary thing.
I believe that.
Yeah, I agree. That pager or that cell phone, that's the most scariest sounding medical field.
Nothing gets my heart racing more than my pager going off. Tell you what.
I will say this, yeah. Right?
That's true.
If ghosts were real, like, I would think, objectively speaking, hospitals would be the most haunted place. Like places on
just
earth,
by
right?
Just by statistics alone.
Right? I mean, like, how many people have died? I mean, it's a little morbid to think about, but how many people die every day in hospitals, right? So, like, if the theory of ghosts is that they stick around where they died at, I mean, like, that would be the place. So you would expect to hear more ghost stories from hospitals, quite frankly. I don't know.
Yeah. The problem is the lights are always on.
I wish
you can't
I
turn off the lights in a hospital.
Yeah, and there's always
It is odd though, because I, as an atheist, I feel like I did have a big shift from being quite afraid of things and being quite easily spooked to really not getting that sensation at all. And in a way, it kind of ruined like scary movies for me. So
there are those wolves again, just howling in the
background.
I'm
sorry. I don't know if it's a full moon tonight or what, but yeah. We have we're going to be doing later. So. Yeah, but the kind of prior beliefs that you have to have about a certain topic in order to get the sensation of being spooked by it, I think that it makes sense that, I mean, you could still be startled as an atheist. I have been, somebody could jump up behind me and I'm going to jump because I still have reflexes. But as far as feeling truly haunted, that sensation really went away when I realized it was all not real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's conditioning too, right? You hear about a lot of stories and you think about your environments in ways. I have family that work in medicine. And so I've been to hospitals late at night, you know, just to see them or see other stuff. And like, it's a very weird vibe, but like, we also have to realize there's people that are working usually 24 hours a day at a hospital too. It's like, there's just people all around. There may be one section that has lights turned off, but there's another one with lights turned on somewhere. And the vibe's not the same. It's like, it's a little more chill. I don't know. I think you're just, again, it's that conditioning that we always get from movies and other kinds of stuff that make it more freaky than it has to be. But, you know, that's all I can really say on that, honestly. What do you think, Jasmine?
I don't know. It may be conditioning, but when I've had to sleep in the pallium beds, I was always creeped out. I would always say an extra prayer or two, certainly, but never slept well in them, even though that they're very comfortable, those pallium beds. Just a thought, I guess.
I guess they're supposed to be comfortable, right? I mean, that's kind of the deal with most beds, I imagine.
Good to know. In Canada, we take care of people in the end, right?
Yeah. At least we try.
We try, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Jasmine, thanks so much for giving your call there. I guess that's all we wanted to talk about with that topic. So thanks again for ringing in. And I want to give a special thank you to everybody that helped make tonight's show happen. I want to give a very special thanks, of course, to the wonderful, fantastic crew that helped make this show happen behind the scenes. Those guys are awesome. And audience too as well. Thank you guys so much for coming out. Oh no, there's some sort of possession happening in the crew room there. I don't know what's going on. Something spooky is happening. But anyway, you guys are good. I want to give a very special thanks to executive producer Greg James for testing a bunch of stuff out tonight and getting everything ready. Greg, you're amazing. And of course, thank you to everybody that showed up tonight for tonight's show. And thank you to all the callers, Aaron and MD. Bravo to both of you guys. Round of applause for your costumes and banter. And tonight has been a really, really fun show. Any final thoughts for you guys before we wrap up tonight's spooky Halloween episode of Truth Wanted?
I think whether it's Halloween night or any other night of the year, when people share spooky stories, remain skeptical because it's nothing special about Halloween night, I would say. It's just another night of the year, but it is fun. It's dress up and go out and have fun and be safe.
Yeah, for sure. MD, final words?
You're going to hear a lot of scary stories, a lot of horror films and horror stories. Just remember, the Bible is the real horror story.
Typical atheist answer there, MD. Typical atheist answer, but you know, I appreciate it. Folks, thanks again to everybody for coming out tonight. This has been a really fun episode of Truth Wanted. I am your host tonight, Objectively Dan. Remember to always keep wanting the truth and have a happy Halloween.
Watch The Non-Profits and join the hosts in the live chat Sundays at 3 p.m. Central between The Atheist Experience and Talk Hidden. Visit tiny.cc/ytnp.